Well, let's discuss the situation in Bahrain with our expert panel today. Well, so far we've got Christopher Walker. He's a Middle East affairs expert joining me on the line from London. Welcome to the programme, sir. Mr. Walker, before the Saudi invasion of Bahrain, there was talk of negotiation and dialogue. But with the current Saudi invasion and the attempt of the government to break up the opposition groups, it seems now that hopes for dialogue have totally been dashed.
Yes, I would totally agree with you, although this week now, in a couple of days' time, a senior American government official, Jeffrey Feltman, is due to return to try and put in place some negotiations between the government and the protesters. Here, Mr. Feltman was there last month, but he got nowhere, and reportedly Bahraini government officials even refused to talk to him when they launched their crackdown. There's no doubt that the U.S. tacit, if not support for the Bahraini authorities, at least its refusal to speak out very toughly against them, is one reason why they feel able, as you so graphically reported, to step up the measures against the mainly Shia Muslim opposition scattered in villages around the capital, Manama.
Well, I mean, why has the United States remained silent on Saudi Arabia's invasion of Bahrain? I mean, while spearheading a war on Libya, why do we see such double standard policies?
Well, I don't think it's a very difficult question to answer. You only have to look to the fact that Bahrain is the regional base of the U.S. Fifth Fleet, and the U.S. Fifth Fleet is its major strategic arm in the Middle East. I mean, it's not only, although it's based in Bahrain, it's used to patrol the oil routes and is crucial to current Washington policy in the region. So they are very worried that if something was to happen in Bahrain of deep instability, that fleet would lose its base. So that's really the guiding force.
Indeed. I mean, well, as you said, Bahrain hosts the Fifth Fleet of the United States Navy. But how likely is it that there would be an active and a direct military role on part of the U.S. in Bahrain? I mean, to see troops on the ground.
What do you mean, in defense of the regime or against it?
No, U.S. troops against the Bahraini protests.
No, I don't think that's likely. Why do they need to when they've got the Saudis and the UAE and that large invasion force that came across the causeway, driving, by the way, British-made, largely armoured personnel carriers there to do the job for them, plus the fact that the Bahraini authorities have a large mercenary paramilitary police force. I don't think there's much danger of them being overwhelmed, and I don't think the Americans would go so far as to be seen on the ground defending a despot.
Let's talk about the opposition in Bahrain. How strong and unified do you see the opposition?
Well, it's not particularly strong in that it's not been allowed to be particularly strong by the ruling Sunni minority, but it's obviously worried them to the extent that they announced last Thursday that the main party, Al-Wefaq, the main opposition party and a smaller opposition faction, were going to be dissolved. Now they appear to have put a slight hold on that. I believe that's probably connected with the arrival of Mr. Jeffrey Feltman, who's a senior State Department expert on Far Eastern affairs, who's due in Manama in the next few days to hold discussions. But that really is a bit of a fig leaf, I think. The opposition knows that when it raises its head, it'll be struck down very hard. But there has been a lot of bravery on the streets. And the fact that they've even the authorities have even had to try and stop the hospitals treating wounded protesters is a sign that they're running quite frightened. They're certainly worried about the fact that basically 60 to 70% of their population is made up of Shia Muslims, while the ruling Khalifa dynasty, which has ruled for over 200 years, is a Sunni Muslim minority. So wherever you have such a small minority imposing its views on a majority, you've got a recipe for trouble. And anybody could have predicted, once the Arab Spring broke out in Tunisia, that right. Bahrain would be an early place.
Right, right. Now, Mr. Walker, with all this crackdown going on in Bahrain against peaceful protests, with all the destruction of religious sites and mosques happening there by the Saudi-backed troops, how likely will the demonstrations in Bahrain turn violent, do you think?
Oh, I think it's very possible that they will. They already are violent in some respects. Don't forget that the authorities have already bulldozed Pearl Roundabout, which was the original centre of the protests, a rather small local equivalent of Tahrir Square in Cairo. That's been reduced to rubble. That famous iconic monument is no longer there. So there have been violent protests, but I think we should probably emphasize that while Libya is virtually a civil war and huge heavy armor has been used by the rebels who operate from Benghazi, in Bahrain the protesters really haven't got access to that sort of weaponry. So there's not going to be, I don't think, a sort of a civil war in that way, because they're hopelessly outgunned by the authorities, and they largely depend on, traditional riot equipment with the occasional small arms weapon.
Indeed. Now, Mr. Walker, you're in London. What kind of a media coverage are you getting on the recent Arab uprising, especially the case of Bahrain?
Well, Bahrain's been far overshadowed in recent media coverage by Libya. Libya is by far and away the main news area from the Arab world, because there's virtually a war taking place then, and dramatic TV footage, whereas from Bahrain, the journalists are very restricted there, operating there, and two, frankly, there hasn't been the Western media interest. I don't know, you can see a conspiracy behind it if you want, that it's in the West's interest not to encourage the downfall of the Khalifa family, the ruling family in Bahrain. But also, I think you have to add to that, it's a much easier place for the authorities to restrict press coverage, because in Libya, for instance, when journalists couldn't get in because Gaddafi didn't at that time want them, they just drove into the east or got there another way. But in Bahrain, they have to go via the airport, and they're just not given visas. So the coverage, there was quite a large article in one of our Saturday papers. Occasionally such articles do appear. It was in the Manchester Guardian under the headline, "Bahrain protests will go nowhere while the US supports its government." And that's about the, I would say, the line that most of the British media are taking.
So, Mr. Walker, very briefly, how do you see traces of Israel in Bahrain?
Yes, well, as you just reported, the fact that a Bahraini Jew was appointed the ambassador in the US, was a sign that there are I think, secret strains there. And, of course, the Fifth Fleet has its own close connections, intelligence-wise, with the Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service. So they're behind the scenes, but there's no doubt their interests are very much in common. The ruling Khalifa family and the Americans and the Israelis are anti-Iran, and that's the danger they see there more than anything.
Right. All right. I'm sorry we have to leave it there. Our interesting discussion there with Christopher Walker, Middle East affairs expert from London. I appreciate your time and thoughts there, gentlemen.